This is the Past Lives Podcast, episode 205, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives Podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We will look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. And this is the free one-hour version of the episode. The extended episode is an hour and 25 minutes. And to get access to the extra 25 minutes and the other extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives Podcast Patreon campaign. When you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday. And you can find it on almost every podcast app. There is also a new $12.50 Patreon tier, where every week you can get the extended episodes of the Past Lives Podcast and the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes. And there are now 49 extended episodes available to the $5 patrons. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. Also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you are a patron, you will get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. And please look out for the Past Lives Podcast episodes that are called Paranormal Stories, and they are released every Thursday. The links are in the show notes, and you can find the show notes for this and every other episode on my website. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And this week I'm talking to Carol Bowman about her essay, Beyond Disbelief, Children's Past Lives and the Continuum of Personality. Carol Bowman, MS, is an internationally known author, lecturer, counsellor, past life regression therapist, and pioneer in reincarnation studies. Her books, Children's Past Lives and Return from Heaven, are now classics in the reincarnation field and have been published and read around the world in 22 foreign editions. Carol has been a practicing past life regression therapist for adults for 30 years. Hi, Carol. Thanks a lot for coming back to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me again.
I wanted to talk to you about this essay that you've written. It's called Beyond Disbelief, Children's Past Lives and the Continuum of Personality. But something I was going to say to you before we start recording is that there seem to be very few really serious people who research this. To my mind, it's you and Jim Matlock, Dr. Jim Tucker. There was Olander Haraldson and Ian Stevenson.
Well, Stevenson had his colleagues around the world. And Dr. Haraldson died, I guess it was last year or the year before. I can't keep track in the pandemic of time anymore. But there aren't that many people doing this full time. And then Karen Weirstein, who manages Jim Matlock's site, is a very good researcher. So they're around. And I think there are more people doing it than I imagined. You know, when I saw the entry, the essays that were entered into the Bigelow contest, there are people who kind of use the children's past lives as evidence for the continuation of consciousness. But they haven't, a lot of them haven't really studied it except some Stevenson cases. And one of the points I make in the essay that I wrote is there's so much more to this than I call it the Stevenson camp, because he started this research. In his camp, who aren't really looking at the same family cases in depth because they think there are too many possible alternate explanations. You know, since it's in the same family, well, maybe they're imposing this identity of a deceased family member on the child, or, you know, the child overheard conversations, which is kind of ridiculous at one or two or three. But, you know, the Stevenson camp pretty much, they documented some of the same family cases, but they didn't think they were good evidence for reincarnation, which was what the essay was about. And also, and I can say this, I think, quite truthfully, that aside from very few therapists, past life therapists, nobody's working with children. You know, very few, you know, when people ask for a referral to someone, I said, well, you know, there aren't that many people I know somebody in Portugal, I know somebody in California, but there aren't that many people. So my work is really about the spontaneous memories of young children. And of course, I'm a past life therapist with adults, as you are. And, you know, we know that there's great potential for healing and addressing these memories. But no one was really talking about that with the spontaneous memories of children. So, you know, I've been trying to educate people for the last 30 years as to the importance of addressing these memories in very young children.
I suppose if a child is sent to a therapist and the therapist knows nothing of this background, that it could be quite harmful in a way, or I suppose just not helpful.
Agreed. Yeah. And that's a problem. And by the time parents get to me with their questions, they've probably looked at a lot of other possible explanations for what their child is saying as a 2, 3, or 4 year old. But then they come to this on their own thinking, you know, maybe this is the explanation. Maybe it is a past life memory. So, I think our role and yours, all of us who do past life therapy, one of the things we need to do is educate parents that these memories can come up spontaneously in young children, and there are ways to talk to a child to help them process the traumatic memories.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of kids have memories of traumatic deaths, and they're still troubled by them emotionally, sometimes physically, having symptoms relating to the manner of their death. And this is kind of how I got into it with my own children, through my son's memories. He had a phobia of loud booming sounds. And when a hypnotherapist friend whom I had worked with asked him to close his eyes and tell us what he sees when he hears the loud booming sounds that are so frightening to him, he was immediately in a past life experience and was on a battlefield. So it doesn't take much. The memories are very close to the surface with children. And they're coming up spontaneously, so it's different than adult memories, where you usually need to access the memories through hypnosis, or sometimes they come up in dreams, through meditation, through different, you know, sometimes drug experiences, psychotropic drugs. So it's a different phenomenon. And I think, you know, parents need to know about that. And that's been my goal, my mission for a long time, just to educate parents, because parents are really in the best position to help young children process the memories as they're coming up spontaneously. Even if you took a child to a therapist, they might clam up and not say anything if you ask them about a past life. So, you know, the best way to approach it is when this window of time is open, where the memories are current with the child and they're talking about them. But it works, you know, this principles are the same, you know, as when adults are doing past life regression therapy. A lot of problems we have go back to traumatic deaths in the past. I'm sure you found the same thing. That I'd say about 90% of the clients I work with, and looking at their core patterns in this life, emotional patterns or physical patterns, when we're doing the past life therapy with adults, we can trace it back to a previous death that was traumatic.
Yeah, it's amazing the insight we can get from past lives, and it can help in all sorts of ways, can't it? But when the children are remembering of these past lives and talking to their parents about it, what would you say to the mothers and fathers? Is there a certain good time of day when children will talk about this? Perhaps it's when they've just got into bed and you might be reading them a story, or it's some quiet time with them. It's not like when they're running around and very busy that they're going to start talking about these things.
That's right. And I talk about this in my first book. I wrote the book as a guide for parents or adults to identify past life memories in children and how to talk appropriately to them about their memories. So what I found was gathering my thoughts to write the first book, which was published in 1997, I found that quite often children's spontaneous memories came up when children were riding in a car, in the car seat, because they were lulled into this hypnagogic state. So they were going into this light trance state in the car seat as the car was moving. And I think any parent knows if you have a cranky child, just put him in the car, take him for a ride, and they'll fall asleep. So, you know, that is the state where they're receptive, or at night before bedtime, or after a bath when they're relaxed. And that's usually when these memories surface, but they can surface during the day too. Something gets triggered in the child, which reminds them of the past life experience, and they'll just blurt it out. And I always recommend that if you're driving a car and this happens, pull over to the side of the road. And a lot of parents have figured that out, because you do, it's quite shocking when you hear your child, you know, your three-year-old, for example, which is kind of the optimal age for children to start talking about it, although they will start talking about it earlier than two. When an adult hears this, and the child is very serious, with a very serious tone of voice, there's this feeling that we as adults get, that it's almost like going into a mild shock when you hear your two-year-old saying, when I died before, or when I died, I fell off my boat and fell in the water. Or when I heard my five-year-old talking about being a soldier and very with much detail, and when he first said, I miss my wife and children, that's the moment I went into this mild shock where I realized, wait a minute, this is, you know, we're in a different paradigm completely. So there is that quality, you know, where parents get that, or adults get that feeling, you know, kind of, you know, you're in new territory, and it is a little jolting. So, you know, if you're driving a car and a child starts talking about a pull over to the side, it's just safer. And if you're home, or, you know, you're doing your normal activities, pause and listen. You know, it might be a fantasy, or it could be a past life memory. And just be receptive. You know, you don't know. You have to discern. You know, is this something that a child saw on TV? Is it something they could have overheard? Or there's no way in the world they could know this, you know, which puts them in the class of past life memories. So there's a certain amount of discernment that has to happen in that moment. And you will not hurt a child by encouraging them to talk about what they just said. You know, if they said, well, when I was big before, reflect back what they're saying. And this is kind of basic counseling skill. Oh, you were big before. Yeah. Oh, well, do you remember more? Can you tell me about that? You were big before. So just reflect back what they're saying, and, you know, which opens up the conversation. And see if they're forthcoming, if they remember anymore, and they may not. It might be just a flash of a memory, and then it's gone. But sometimes they will talk about it, or sometimes they seem to be troubled by what they're describing as a past life memory. They could be very sad. They could get very emotional. But that's okay. Let them. And I found that there were some very simple ways that you can help them process a troubling memory. And one way, which sounds too simplistic, but it's very effective, when you're in this conversational mode with them and you can get some story out so you know what you're working with, say that, the child says, well, I was big before, and there was a fire, and my wife died, my children died. And, you know this is not fantasy, right? Just by what the child says. And you can assure them that they are now safe. that whatever happened before is over, and they're now safe in a new body. And it works. It really helps them realize that what they're experiencing is over, because they're still on this continuum of what I call continuum of consciousness from the past life when they're that age. They don't really know the difference between present reality and what happened in the past. It's as vivid, the past is as vivid to them as something that happened maybe a week or two ago. So they need to realize that they have made the transition. And sometimes children will even recall this spontaneously and say something to the effect that, oh, yeah, and then I remember coming back into your tummy. So they remember the full arc of that life and, oh, yes, and then I came back to you. So and sometimes children will have memories of the interim after the death experience between their present incarnation, that life between life, as Michael Newton calls it, phase of the journey in the Bardo states, you know, when they're out of body, and they'll remember sometimes trailing their current parents. You know, they're aware of what the parents were doing even before their conceptions.
Yeah, I remember that is part of James Leninger, isn't it? He talked about being in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. And a lot of kids remember that. I don't think it's that unusual, but I think a lot of parents might have that experience, but kind of write it off as what? You know, is this really possible? But they, you know, there are a lot of similarities. They remember sometimes meeting with deceased relatives who seem to guide them into the present life. There's this, that phenomenon. And, but that really helps them let go of the past too, realizing that, oh, I came back, you know, that it's okay. I'm in a different life now.
Yeah.
So that's it. I think helping them make that distinction is very important for them, so they can let go of whatever happened. If they need to let it go, like the trauma, not all, as we know, not all past life memories are traumatic. There are some benign memories or some memories where children have accessed skills they've learned in the past or just wisdom that they've acquired in the past. And if the child seems to be having a pleasant memory, there's really no intervention necessary, you know, just let them talk about it. And through their conversation, you might be able to see similarities between the past experience and their present personalities. But it could be something positive, which can be reinforced, or just understanding where your child is coming from is helpful. You know, why they have certain behaviors or certain likes or dislikes. I mean, it could show up as something as a dietary preference. You know, if a child remembered, oh, in fact, I remember this one family, the mother said that she kept talking about, the little girl kept talking about her life in China. This is like a 3-year-old, and the mother didn't even know if she knew what China was or where it was. And she had a particular food preference. She didn't like American food. And when the mother figured this out, she started feeding her some rice, you know, to get her eating. And, you know, it was curious. It's just a curiosity, you know, that we can carry forth behaviors and likes and dislikes from a previous life. But that's an important part of what this is, you know, how these past life memories affect us in the present, which they do. And they help form our present personalities.
Hello, listeners. This is Simon. Now, some of you know I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world.
Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyze what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes.
And do you find the children kind of talk about the past lives in a very matter-of-fact tone of voice? It's almost like, oh, yeah, there's no question that this is real. The one time this happened with me, my daughter was 3 years old, and we were in the kitchen, and she was just walking through, and she said, you know, I used to pick you up when you were this small. And I would say, what does that? And she looked at me as though she didn't remember she even said it, you know, and just never said anything again like that. But it was very kind of, oh, yeah, everybody knows about this sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And if you challenge them by saying something like, oh, you saw this on TV, they'll be very adamant. No, that's me. You know, they are very matter of fact and very serious about it. And I think your experience was fairly typical of how these children can just bring it up. And, you know, it could be just one remark. But a lot of kids have more recall than just one statement. You know, it shows up in their behaviors. It shows up as they acquire more language, they might talk about the same past life experience, but in more detail as they acquire the language skills. And that's typical too. They can talk about it for months or even a couple of years. And it's interesting in my son's case, which was my introduction to children's past lives. I had no idea that children had these memories. I had no idea they had spontaneous memories. I lost that train of thought, sorry. But it's not unusual for a child to keep talking about it. And in my son's case, he's going to be 40 this year, and he was 5 when his phobias developed of loud booming sounds and when he first recalled his previous life on a battlefield. He still has visual memory of it, but the terrifying emotions associated with that death went away after he processed it at age 5. But he can still bring up that memory, and he still has a visual image of what it was like to have left the body, to have died, and looking down at the battlefield and seeing the topography of that area. He still has that visual memory all these years later, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, and I think I saw drawings that he did, and there was it a gun carriage as well that he couldn't possibly have known that they right. set things up like that?
Yeah, he got a lot of detail in the first recollection was about 15 minutes where he was talking about it, but also he was... You know, where we were encouraging him to keep talking about it by reflecting back what he was saying, you know, and asking questions. Well, then what happened? You know, open-ended questions. That's another technique to use with the children. Just keep it very open-ended. So you aren't planting suggestions, but encouraging them to talk about it. Yeah, he remembered, and this is a kid who never owned a toy gun. He was not interested in anything but Legos and building and not a lot of little boys are interested in guns and playing soldier. He was not. So he described the artillery they used. And we later found out it was the American Civil War that he was describing. And he actually had said he was Black. You remember being an African-American soldier there were regiments of African-American soldiers in the American Civil War. So he remembered a lot of detail that a 5-year-old couldn't have known. And that's definitely one of the indications that a child is remembering a past life. When they describe death in detail, or what they did in the past, and there's no way they could have known the details of that kind of experience as, you know, 3, 4, or 5 year old. So
yeah, you're saying he remembers the life as a black soldier, and mm-hmm. do you think it's useful and for children to have those memories where perhaps they were a different race or the opposite gender?
Absolutely. I think this is, you know, one of the reasons why we have so many experiences in different lives is to learn empathy. You know, we are no different.
Yeah.
And it really has shaped his worldviews. And he's talked about that. He still does interviews very rarely, and people find him on the internet and ask him questions. You know, what is it like to be an adult who had memories as a child? And he thinks it's very helpful. You know, having recognized that was a very difficult life, and he has a different life now. And he, as he said, he doesn't sweat the small stuff. You know, he has a bigger perspective that this isn't, you know, this is not just one shot at life.
It almost seems like there should be every school should have a child psychologist specializes in past life memories, and every child goes to see them and they work out what they're bringing through from the past life that's not useful and then helps them with it.
Yeah, in an ideal world.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's still taboo. Some people feel it's taboo to talk about this. And yeah. I did a book group once when my first book came out. And these were, the person who set it up meant well, but she didn't realize these were very religious people. So I felt like a comedian in a club that completely bombed.
Oh.
I was telling these stories and I was looking at the people pulling back. They were not receptive. And that's the only time I've had that kind of experience. But it was a real eye-opener that, yeah, well, not everyone's receptive to this. You know, it's, yeah. I think, and I don't really feel I'll see the acceptance I was hoping for in my lifetime.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's the way different religions view reincarnation, isn't it? And the way they teach about it. Do you think that sometimes the parents find this more traumatic than the children, even if the children are having real traumatic memories of a past life death?
Especially if it challenges their deep held beliefs. And that's the title of our essay. And my husband helped me with the essay, so I call it our essay, Beyond Disbelief. If they can get beyond disbelief and open up to what a child is saying, their life changes. They're, you know, it's a real paradigm shift for them, but it can be very difficult for people who are very religious, who feel that if they ever shared this with family members, they would be ostracized or ridiculed. So belief is very powerful. You know, we all have cultural beliefs, religious beliefs, whether we're aware of it or not, we have biases. Basically, we're all brainwashed in different ways. So, you know, if you have deeply held religious beliefs, believe you're going to go to hell if you believe this kind of stuff, it could be a real damper, you know, in accepting what's right before your eyes and what you're observing in a child. So that was the title of the essay. If people could just get beyond that and be exposed to these stories, because stories really speak to people more than statistics. If you tell the story well, and this is a point I made in the essay, if you tell a story well, there's going to be some resonance of truth with people, you know, where you get that feeling that maybe this is real, you know, this could be real. So I think it's just a matter of people hearing a story like the James Leininger story. And opening up to what's possible. And I know that story, you know, that case has opened up a lot of people. I've heard from many people
yeah.
that that was a turning point for a lot of them.
So the amount of detail that also that he talked about and was proved, and I wonder how many of the cases you come across does the child have that amount of detail, or is it mostly the children are, I don't know if vague is the right word, but they don't have that much that they can say?
I think the biggest difficulty in doing this research of children's memories in the West, in Western culture, where we, you know, the Judeo-Christian culture is, it seems that the cases that Dr. Ian Stevenson investigated beginning in the early 60s were mostly in countries in which they believed in reincarnation. And for some reason, those cases are much more detailed. The children remember proper names. They could remember their own name. They could remember the name of relatives. They could remember the town in which they had lived before. In Western cases, it's very difficult to find a case that can be, as they call it, solved. You know, where we have proper names, we can positively identify who the child was before, as in the James Leininger case. They are very rare. And I've been doing this, I've been collecting cases for more than 30 years now. And I only have a handful of cases where the child remembered proper names so we could find out who the child had been.
The cases that you work with, the people you work with, that's it's like a secondary thing, isn't it? Because it's about helping the parents and the child with healing and dealing with it in a positive way.
I've never charged money for helping the parents. You know, my day job is doing past life therapy with adults, but I always saw this as my service work. Nobody else is talking about this. You know, this is my mission. You know, and I took it on gladly. I made money writing two books, but aside from that, it's just been, you know, a passion of mine to share what I've learned. And, you know, I think I have written a couple of articles, and one article that the article we were talking about is on my website, and we're giving that out for free. You know, it's kind of, I feel like it's my legacy statement, looking at all of these aspects of children's past lives that a lot of researchers are not looking at. So if you go to my website, it's carolbowman.com. You can find a link to the essay, and it's about 67, 68 pages. But it gives you background, you know, about, I tell a lot of stories. I repeat a lot of cases that I had in my books, but, you know, they're summarized, you know, they're edited way down, but making certain points that this is how these memories are expressed in children. And these are the parents' reactions. And this could be a reason why people reincarnate into the same family. And this is how these memories can heal children. So I make a lot of points in that short essay. Well, it's not real short essay, but these are important points in understanding what past life memories are and how they affect us.
It's part of the, is it the, I can't remember, the Bigelow Foundation, isn't it? And they ask for people, just anybody, to send in these essays. Is that right?
Well, it wasn't anyone. We had to, they ended up accepting 210 essays, I think. So people were able to submit proposals, you know, and a resume, you know, a CV. And then you have to be accepted to even write the essay to apply. And actually, quite truthfully, I was very disappointed that they didn't want any original research. Most of the winners wrote academic papers and an overview of the whole field, including NDEs, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, mediumship, and children's past lives. But they covered all of those, and it was very academic papers, very dry. I didn't see too much original research, except James Leininger's father, Bruce Leininger, wrote about his son's case. But it was really, it wasn't, it was somewhere between academic and the style of writing a book. You know, it was not really for the general public. It was really for this, specifically for the essay contest with just a list of evidence, you know, the statements that James made, which pretty much were in his books, in his book rather. So yeah, I'm kind of disappointed that they didn't want anything new.
I suppose they're looking for evidence of the afterlife, aren't they? Because I think Bigelow was interested in UFOs for a long time, and now it's well, at least I suppose it's good that somebody with a lot of money is making an effort to get this stuff investigated.
I think it's great. Yeah, and the UFO research, I think it's really important.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, he's a thinker. He didn't make the decisions. He picked judges. He selected a panel of six judges, including Brian Weiss, who is a colleague in the past life therapy community, and Leslie Keen, who's written about past lives and UFOs. But, you know, the rest were academics. So they were looking for an academic article, which mine wasn't. I wrote for the general public, not knowing they were looking for an academic article. But it was good. You know, it was a good exercise. I'm in my 70s now, and you know, I'm looking looking back. You know, I want to leave a little more before I go about children's past lives and what I see is important about these memories, which I can't find anyone else talking about the healing.
I find your books, I think they're essential reading. You know, if somebody asked me, I would say there's your books and Dr. Jim Tucker and Jim Matlock and Ian Stevenson a bit, but he seems to be quite academic when in his writing.
Yeah, but in one of the problems I see with skeptics challenging these memories is that if they actually read some of Stevenson's work and read the cases that Stevenson wrote up, the depth of the cases and his very thorough methods of investigating the cases, I think that would resolve this question once and for all. Yes, these memories are real. And I can't see that coming up with another 100 or 200 or 300 solved cases is going to make that much difference. You know, are people going to be swayed by that if they haven't been swayed by Stevenson's work? Because his work is, you know, critics will find ways to discredit it, but it's pretty amazing because it is so detailed. And the Asian cases, as I said before, are very detailed because the children remember proper names so that Stevenson could find out who the child had been. And he interviewed the former family and was able to corroborate what the child had said about the former life. And there were a lot of cases. I think he found about 35% of the children who had these memories that could be verified had birthmarks or birth defects corresponding to fatal wounds and injuries. And in, I think it was 1998 or so, he published a 2,200 page tome, two volume set called Reincarnation in Biology, which is actual physical evidence for carryover from previous lives.
I got the book. I think that was pared down into a single book, where reincarnation and biology intersect. I think I've got that. And there's some great photos in there as well as all the other information.
And that's really all you need. The summary, where reincarnation biology intersect. The two-volume set is very expensive. And for most people, it's not necessary to go through all of those cases because he does a great job of summarizing in where reincarnation and biology intersect. So I recommend that people read that one to get the idea.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a quote from him that you've got in the essay that I liked, where he said, "For me, everything now believed by scientists is open to question And I'm almost dismayed to find that many scientists accept the current knowledge as forever fixed. And it does seem like that, doesn't it? That scientists, not all scientists, obviously, but some of them seem to just put their fingers in their ears and they close their eyes. And it's like saying, no, my mind's made up. I don't want to hear anything you have to say. There's no new evidence that can change me.
And that's very true. I just have a small anecdote. My brother is an MD, PhD. He was a research scientist and a surgeon at Johns Hopkins University or Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland, which is one of the most highly regarded hospitals in this country. And he spent his whole career from an undergraduate through his long career. He retired a few years ago. He's in his mid-70s now. And I had this conversation with him the other day that his field was in neurology, axonal transport. Don't ask me to explain it, but it's how nerves connect, finding the amino acids, down to the molecular level. How do nerves communicate? Can you regenerate nerves? And he did that in his lab. But he said that it was an interesting conversation. I'd never had this before with him. He said, yeah, I never told you that I discovered some amino acids, but more than that, everyone was looking at this certain problem in a certain way. And all of a sudden I got this realization that, wait a minute, let's flip this around. They're looking at it in the wrong way. And that started a whole new field of research. So it's exactly what you're saying. A real scientist is open to looking at things differently. Yeah. So that just happened a couple of days ago. So I was like, yeah, you're a real scientist.
Yeah, I had a description of science as that all scientists do is find better and better ways of being wrong. But I wanted to ask you about one of the cases in the essay, which you call The Soul of a Fireman Child. And that's one you think you know who it is, you've solved it, but you're not going to give out the name of the previous personality.
And there are a lot of reasons not to. Yeah, this little boy in California was obsessed with firefighting. You know how kids can be obsessed with, fire trucks or being a policeman or a ballerina, whatever, which is sometimes indicative of what they've done in the past. So he was obsessed with everything that had to do with firefighting. He knew things that a 3-year-old, 4-year-old could not know about firefighting. And one day his mother was reading a Curious George book to him. And on the cover of the book was a drawing of the Manhattan skyline, an old drawing with the Twin Towers. And he pointed to the Twin Towers and he said, the bad men knocked them down. And he, in his play, he would always pretend to knock down walls with his play firefighting equipment. He had a little belt with all the little axe and the firefighter equipment. I don't know exactly what was on it. And he would always go into his sister's room right before bedtime and do a check. And then he would check around with his equipment, with his flashlight, and go, all clear. And she would go to sleep and he would be satisfied and could leave the room. He would do that every night. And he was obsessed with fire safety. And after he saw that drawing, he appeared to be a little troubled about it. Didn't these people have families, these men who knocked over these buildings? And the mother began to wonder, how did he know this? How do you know those buildings were knocked down in the first place? They lived in California. He was only, he was born, I think, 3 years after 9/11. But anyway, as it developed, he remembered more and more detail about his fire truck and where his fire station was. And he described it as downtown, which in New York, you would say Twin Towers were downtown. And he remembered the number on his fire truck, the number on his helmet, the name of a friend, And the mother was able to piece together what he said. And with the statements the child made and arrived at who he had been. And there were some details she omitted. She posted this story on my reincarnation forum, which we set up in 1997 to support parents whose children might have past life memories. And a group of moderators have run it for a long time. And we actually give people as much advice as we can to help them help their own children. So this mother had posted on the forum, and we all jumped in because we looked, wow, this is a really good case. And, you know, it could be solved. And she did solve it. And she withheld details from the forum because people were jumping all over it and trying to figure out who he had been. And she did not want that attention on her son. She described him as very shy. She was kind of a, you know, you'd call an introvert. She did not want the public attention. So at a certain point, she decided, and, you know, we both agreed that she should withhold details because people will figure it out and may contact the other family. And when she shared with me who this child had been before, we read the obituaries online, we read family tributes, and they were very religious people, very Christian. And we discussed whether it would be a good idea to share this information with the family. And after reading the testimonials and everything the family had said, no, we figured it would be very disruptive for them and their religious beliefs, which were very strong. You know, they really believe that their loved one is in heaven with Jesus, and that gives them comfort. And because this was, you know, this wasn't in a distant time, you know, this wasn't a collective trauma in recent times. The family is still grieving. I imagine this fireman's parents could be still alive. Certainly the siblings seem to be alive. And what would this do to them? Would this help them, or would this just destroy them? So she didn't want to share it because she didn't want the public scrutiny. She didn't want anyone talking to her child about it. She wanted her child to have a normal life. And we decided that it would not be a good idea for her to go public. But it was a solved case. You know, we did figure out who he had been, and everything matched up. In fact, she found a testimonial from one of the firemen who was coming down through one of the Twin Towers, and he saw the persona of this boy, and his last statements matched up with what the child remembered about his last moments as a fireman. So there was that corroboration from the eyewitness. So, you know, it's hard to explain how real this is when you realize that, or what happens when you realize this is real. It affects you on many different levels, on all levels. And it's a complete shift. You know, you can't think the same way after realizing that this is true. And I'm sure, you know, it goes the same way with adult clients in past life therapy. It does change your worldview to different degrees.
Yeah. And did the boy have trauma from the past life death, and it was able to work through and it was healing to remember that past life death?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question because, as I said, one of his play activities, which was unusual, was he would, before he was even that verbal, he would take his toy axe and pretend he was cutting down walls in the house. You know, it was a plastic axe, fortunately, or else he would have succeeded. And he would always say that, I've got to get the people out from behind the wall. They're calling for me. I can't get them out. So this, you know, added to the realism for the mother. You know, the father didn't want to believe this. but the mother was onto it. You know, she was open and receptive to it. And the last thing that this fireman had said, as corroborated by the eyewitness, was, "There are people behind this wall. I have to get them out. I'll be down when I get them out." So he was doing in his play activity. He was obsessed with it in his play activity. So that's how he was working it out. And other children do that through their play too. Like James Leininger was obsessed with toy airplanes, and he'd pretend to crash them on their coffee table. And he would take off the propellers, and apparently in his former life, his plane hit. He was a pilot in World War II in the Pacific. His plane was hit in the front, as far as we know. And, you know, so they're trying to work it out through play.
Yeah.
Repetitive play activities. You know, when you think about it, that's what, you know, trauma treatment, you know, you kind of work through trauma by talking about it. And the children can, even children who are traumatized in this life, will, you know, have play activities, or, you know, repeatedly talk about it in the same way. So it works the same way as childhood trauma in this life.
And do you have basic advice for parents? Because in the essay, you say that there's a basic pattern. Lots of the children may have unique memories, but actually the basics are the same across most of the children.
Right. And basically, the memories that we need to address are of traumatic deaths. As I said, you know, probably children talk about positive past life memories all the time, but people don't really acknowledge it. They assume it's fantasy. Oh, I had horses. I was a farmer and I had horses, and we had a barn, and I had wife and children. Well, I think a lot of parents would write that off as a fantasy. But when children talk about dying and they have a phobia or some troubling behavior, or they appear to be troubled by something, we're going to notice that before we are a more benign memory. Or we might think it's, you know, oh, that's interesting. You were a farmer. Would you like horses now? Yeah, I want to ride a horse. You know, it's very benign. It's nothing to be concerned about. So what's basic is that a lot of kids who have traumatic memories do have some troubling feelings about them. And I cite some cases in my essay, which people can read. And in my opinion, it's very important to allow a child to talk about it. Do not cut them off. Do not dismiss it, because they need some clarification that this has happened, something that happened before, it's over, and they're now safe in a new body, or they have enough to eat in this life. You know, whatever the story is, the past life story is, you know, you want to offer affirmations that, you know, we'll keep you safe, or we have enough food, you're not going to be hungry. You have to tailor it to each child's memory. And in the case of the little boy who remembered being the 9/11 fireman, I think at one point, and you can see this on the forum as the case unfolds, that he needed to know that he did all that he could. He had some guilt about not saving the people, which played into his play activities where he's trying to get the people out behind the walls with his play axe. He needed to know that he did everything he could. And he died feeling he failed.
Yeah.
So you have to really work with the story and try to figure out what's going on. Why is the child still troubled? And in my son's case, his war memory, as he was able to express more over a 2-year period from 5 to 7, he was guilty about being a soldier and killing other people. He didn't know what he said he didn't know what he was getting into with that war. And which is true in almost any war. But he missed his wife and family. That was the thing that really bothered him, that he couldn't say goodbye to them. So we did a little healing work around that. He and I talked about it. And when he was in that state remembering, he did say goodbye to his wife and family, and that settled something in him so he could let it go. So each memory is different. Each child is different. The response is different. But generally, the troubling memories are of traumatic deaths. And that's where you need to help the child by talking it through, you know, using the open-ended questions. The worst thing you can do is shut them down. Those are the people who are going to come to us as adults and do past life therapy.
So you got those two great books. It's one's Return from Heaven, Beloved Relatives Reincarnated Within Your Family. And the other one is Children's Past Life, How Past Life Memories Affect Your Child. And they are both on Amazon, aren't they? And they've been translated into other languages.
Yeah. They've been out there for now more than 20. Well, first book came out in 97 and the second book came out in 2001. So they might not be available in some of the translations or some of the other foreign editions at this point. I've kind of lost track. But they were on Amazon. I guess they still.
Can you tell us about your website? Do you like it when people contact you with these stories? Or can they book sessions with you?
I'm not making any new appointments now. I'm taking a couple months off just to figure out what I want to do next. That's okay. What happens when you hit past 70. You start thinking about it. But I'm not making any appointments right now, but I probably will start again in May. And but I love to get children's stories. And, you know, if someone feels they need help, I am always willing to help parents after they read the book. They have to read Children's Past Lives first, because it could answer all of their questions. I wrote it for parents to be the guidebook you can use, reference book. This is how you talk to a child with past life memory. This is how you can distinguish a past life memory from fantasy. It's all there. But if they feel they need like more tailored techniques or specific techniques they can use with the particular things that the child is bringing up, I'm willing to help them, you know, just by listening. I ask a lot of questions, get a little more history. And it's always, always important to, if a child is talking about past life memory, to write it down and date it, so you have a chronology, because you will forget. You will forget when the child said this, what order, and that can be very helpful in trying to figure out how to help a child.
And you've got the Reincarnation Forum, which is reincarnationforum.com.
Correct, yeah. And they're very good moderators who have been with me for years who are running it. I'm kind of hands off. If they get a very interesting case, they let me know. But, you know, after saying the same things over and over and over again for years, it's like, you know, no, I want other people to say things too. I don't want it to be just my take on it. So they're very good and they're very dedicated, you know, all volunteers. You know, couldn't ask for better help. So yeah, you can share on the forum, and there are hundreds and hundreds of posts archived, including the 9/11 firemen. And if you go, there's a part where a thread about maybe not special cases, but some of the better cases. And you can find there's several 9/11 stories there, including that one.
And I'll put all the links in the show notes. And
well, that's great.
People can get the essay from your website as well, which is a really good read, although I do recommend the books.
Thank you.
So much more detail there. And it's been really great talking to you. And thanks a lot for coming back onto the podcast.
Well, it's really nice to be interviewed by somebody who knows the field too.
Oh,
thank you. Appreciate that.
And that was an interview with Carol Bowman about her essay, Beyond Disbelief, Children's Past Lives and the Continuum of Personality. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast. or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And this is the free 1 hour version of the episode. The extended episode is an hour and 25 minutes. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. And if you enjoy the $5 a month tier, you will have access to extended episodes every week and the back catalogue of extended episodes. Also, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. And you can book a free consultation call at my website. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast. And I release new episodes every Monday. And you can find that on almost every podcast app. My Instagram is the Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word. And on Twitter, I am at Simon G. Bown. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group. And if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.